Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, along with Denise Miller, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow Pullman. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah and Whitman Recovery Community Centers. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. The LRC is located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow, and you can contact them by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. Their hours are 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. The WRC is located at 226 East Main Street in Pullman, and you can contact the WRC by phone at 509-715-1111 or by email at wrccprogrammanager@gmail.com. And their hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I am Radio Johnny, and you can check out the WRCC and LRCC calendars online at the website for all the cool stuff coming up. And we have a kind of a special day today. This is the beginning of our ninth year of doing Recovery Radio with Miss Denise and I, and so we're pretty excited about that. That's a long darn time.
It is. It's been a while.
So yeah,
glad you're all listening today.
Yeah, and we just found out today that the show's being picked up by a recovery group in England and rebroadcast there, and we suspect but don't know that people are picking it up all over the place, so that's great. We really appreciate it, and we hope we're living up to and maybe even exceeding your expectations for what some raw recovery sounds like. You know, we're totally unscripted, other than that little bit I just read, and the people we interview are real. Have a lot of really great experience, both on the from inside addiction and behavioral health and from around it, like our experiences with Dr. Valerie Russo.
Yes.
So anyway, again, thank you very much, everyone, for listening, and we'll try and keep up the good work. And today we have a guest, a special guest, I say, in the what do we call, conference room/studio?
Exactly.
With us.
Our office for the hour.
That's right. And that would be Ivy Lurie. Ivy, welcome. So glad to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
It's always good to have a guest on here.
It is.
Ivy, just a little bit about her. I actually met her at a screening of a documentary that was done for the Hope Center, focusing on Steve Otto. And the Hope Center is a interesting operation here in Moscow, Idaho. They not only run a thrift store there, but they also do a program called Hope at Work. And at that screening, Ivy was able to get up and share a little bit about her experience in the Hope at Work program and some fantastic poetry that she writes too. So excited to have you here. Ivy, why don't you go ahead and start off and tell us a little bit about your recovery story.
Well, thank you, Johnny. First off, I'm the oldest of four siblings. I'm 38 years old. I was originally born into a family, wonderful as it may sound. It had its rockiness, and unfortunately, my biologicals divorced when I was about 13. Then my sister and my younger brother ended up kind of getting integrated into a new family and were adopted, and it was a Jewish household. So originally we were born Christian and then integrated into a Jewish environment and changed our names. So originally it was more a Christianized name, and now it was more of a Jewish name. And then we progressively moved on to learning the different customs. And then, so those customs were kind of confusing at times, because one minute we were Christian and celebrating Christmas and Easter, and then we were celebrating Hanukkah, Passover, going to the synagogue. So it was a little confusing as a child to be switching off like that. And when I officially turned 13, I ended up integrating into a custom in Jewish tradition. They transitioning into adolescent to adult. They usually have a bar or bat mitzvah. Well, I didn't end up getting that per se. I instead was told that in order to integrate into womanhood, that I was going to be basically brought in with my father, and he wanted to show that what love and everything could feel like in a proper sense. And got my whole view on relationships really twisted from then on, because he took advantage of me as a young girl, and it just brought havoc of trauma and everything. And I just remember getting into the shower and just wanting to scrub every inch of my skin off, thinking I was so dirty. And then progressively kept happening over and over again. And my adoptive mom at the time didn't really fully comprehend what was going on. And then it just progressively getting worse. And he was finally, after so many years, I think it was 15 years down the road, he ended up getting diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So after, it was probably about 30 when he got diagnosed and had only 3 months to live. And I was like, well, I have my younger siblings, and I think I can stick around an additional 3 months to, you know, help them, because I wouldn't wish cancer on any of my worst enemies at all, regardless of how wrong they've treated me. And yeah, it just seeing how they degrade right in front of you, it puts a whole different meaning on killing with mercy, in a sense. You just want them to be at peace and not suffer. And I guess in a lot of sense, that was the best way to go for him. I mean, I hope he found peace. I hope whatever was bothering him, he was laid to rest with that. And then 8 years after he had passed, our adoptive mom got diagnosed with colon cancer. We knew something was wrong for a while, but like every doctor she went to, they were saying it was pretty much in her head and whatnot. And I guess overall it was pretty traumatic for her too, that she was seeing things and like she knew something wasn't right. And so it progressively got worse. And then we were in Virginia at the time when she passed. And then our brother was going to U of I here. And he said, well, you know, you girls, you should really think about moving up closer to us, you know. And I was like, okay, well, we've never been to Moscow. So we ended up coming out here, and we got involved with the community. First, we discovered ATVP, Alternatives to Violence of the Blues. And we started learning about different mechanics of what trauma and things that happened to us were not normal. Growing up in that kind of environment is very traumatic. And also, it just had a whole different meaning on life for me to find that there is another side to all that horror, and finding a light at that end of the tunnel. And I'm very grateful for my brother moving us up here, because I wouldn't have met these wonderful people, Johnny, Denise, the Hope at Work program. And going based on the Hope to Work program, I just I'd really admire the work that they do for the people out there. The director, Brian Nutbrock, and his two sons, who put on the Steve's documentary, mm-hmm. The Hope at Work, I believe it was called The Hope to Work, documentary, whatever. Yeah. It was really emotional to be a part of something like that. I've been at the Hope of Work program for a little bit over a year now. I will be technically leaving the program in this last Saturday. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I will be moving on to a manager position at Petco. And I also was in 4-H for pretty much my whole life. So they were really welcoming me with welcome arms. So
that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just listening to your story there, Ivy, I must admit I'm a little bit shocked that, you know, after suffering the abuse, you know, at the hands of your adoptive father, that you were able to be there for him as he was passing and offering him so much grace. I don't think a lot of people would necessarily do that.
You're right. I mean, there are many ways people can be, and usually one of them is bitterness and anger and hate. And one of the things I grew up believing is hate breeds hate, and anger brings anger to others. And growing up in the Jewish household, I also saw like what happened when there was segregations and like all this, you know, not peaceful or graciousness, and you know, it just tears people apart. Yeah, there's wrong in every human based opinion or whatever they do. We're not perfect,
right?
But I mean, we try to do what we can for the good of the people,
right? Sure, for sure. And in transitioning or changing over to a different religion, I mean, I've actually known quite a few people who, you know, grew up in a Catholic church or a Protestant church and converted to Judaism just because it made more sense to them. But to be just kind of thrust into that, you know, it could be a little challenging, I think, for most people. So that you're able to do that gracefully, that was pretty amazing to me. I mean, Jesus was a Jew after all, but, you know, there are some stark differences. And then, you know, going through that for you and not being able to do your bat mitzvah, you know, that was unfortunate too. You know, I've had a lot of Jewish friends. I just, within the last couple of years, found out through one of my sisters did a 23andMe test, and we found out we are 26% Ashkenazi Jew. So, but, you know, we're all, you know, we never knew who my father's father was. That was cloaked in secrecy at the turn of the century. So it was interesting to, you know, find that out. But he was raised in a, you know, Christian Protestant, or actually Catholic, Irish Catholic household. And then when I grew up in the Lutheran church. So I call myself a recovering Lutheran. Yeah, so that is, you know, it's unfortunately that you got into, you know, were brought into it and didn't get the full experience. And the experience that you did get was awful.
Well, I also, to bring on to that, my father, adoptive father, was in the active military around the United States. And then we also lived in Israel for 4 years. So we transitioned from the United States customs to Israeli customs. And so it was kind of a big shocker there. And both my biological sister and I went to a Jewish private day school back in Oklahoma. So we learned Hebrew at an early age. And we were pretty much the only ones in our family at that time that spoke fluent Hebrew.
That is actually really cool, the Hebrew.
Oh, wow.
And so when we transitioned into Israel, we were kind of translating for our parents and stuff and trying to tell them what people were saying. And we were also, like, we were discriminated against. My sister and I, we had blue eyes, light skin, fair hair, and, you know, we were called blue-eyed demons and all this other stuff, and, like, go back to Germany where you belong. And I was like, what? So I was very confused. I had a lot to offer the country, and I felt like I was being misplaced in some ways. But yeah, it was a big change, but everything there was so vibrant, so fresh. Like, the smells were amazing. The sights were amazing. I mean, there were so many good qualities about it. I wouldn't change it for a lifetime. However, there were points in there where I had struggled because I was trying to speak out against a lot of the abuse, that he was trying to control me. So he proceeded to make a claim saying that I was crazy and needed to go into ECT, which is called electroshock therapy. And for twice a week for 4 consecutive years, I went in having electroshock therapy.
Oh, wow.
In order to keep me quiet.
Yeah, so I was going to say, he was trying to make you keep the secret.
Exactly. And wow. In one of those experiences, the second time around I went in for that, I had a near-death experience. I was having an anxiety attack, and I ended up flatlining for 2 minutes. And in that time frame, it was hard to explain. It was dark. There was, like, stars around this, like, visions and stuff that I was seeing. But there was this light that was pulling me forward. And I was like, well, is this where I'm going, obviously? And it's probably going to lead me somewhere. So I start following it. And then all of a sudden, I feel this, like, tug. Like, it's not letting me fully go to that light. And I'm like, what's going on here? And then I hear this hum, this, like, song of something. And all I kept thinking is the Psalm of Psalms from the point where I walked the shadow of the valley of death.
Mm, you know, that part. Psalm, yeah,
exactly. And I wasn't scared anymore, but I knew that, like, I wasn't done yet. I was given a second chance at life from that point. And I knew at that point in time that was going to be a big turning point, because we ended up moving back to the States roughly 3 years after that, and then we moved to Montana, and then we kind of integrated there for 18 years, and we ended up getting the news about the cancer, and that was kind of like the big moment where my life was going to take a change for mm-hmm. the good. So, and that's where I moved to here, Moscow, after Virginia, and started working for the Hope to Work program. And it was funny because Cheryl, Steve, and Mark were my people who did my interview. And given the fact originally it was just going to be Steve and Mark, but granted, they found out what my situation was, and they were like, well, do you think maybe having another female in the room would make you feel more comfortable? And so Cheryl came in, and more than feeling nervous and scared and everything for that interview, I felt like I was talking to two fathers and a grandma. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. And so I just really fell in love from that moment on, and just was like, I felt like I was coming home.
You know, it's fascinating that you say that, because when I met Steve Otto, it was back when he was running Otto's Produce. And the first time, you know, I met him, and I said, my wife had met him and was raving about him. You know, what a great produce place. And this guy knows everything about produce and whatnot. And so I happened to be in there, and I went over and I introduced myself, and he shook my hand, and I just had this really strange, warm feeling. Like, this is somebody I've known forever when just meeting him. And he is, you know, every time I bumped into him, and we've interviewed him here several times, sometimes on his own, and a couple of times with his partner, John, who he used to go down, I don't know if he still does or not, carrying the message down to the prisons mm-hmm. in Orfino. And, yeah, he's one of those people that as soon as you meet him, he just puts you at ease.
You go away feeling better.
Oh yeah.
Throughout your day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I follow what you're saying when, you know, you had that feeling of, being connected to them, you know, like family rather than people interviewing you. And you know what? I want to kind of pop over now and actually talk about that program you were in. And I'll give the people a little bit of a background here before we talk about your experience with it. And from their website, when they describe Hope at Work, they say the Hope at Work program is much more than a job. The Hope at Work program regularly works with people experiencing these common struggles, getting back into the workforce after a long break, having no work experience, gaining stability in life, suffer from depression or anxiety, single parenting, or a victim of domestic abuse, living in transitional housing, who have a desire to be independent of state and federal resources, of course, people who have a criminal background or are on probation, and people who suffer from addiction issues, although they would like to see 90 days of sobriety. Actually, it's a requirement before entering the program. And the participants in the Hope at Work program are employed full-time in the thrift store and participate in each aspect of the training. And the first one they list is budget coaching. Now, what was that like for you? Had you had any experience with budgeting prior, or?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I am a big bargain girl, so I kind of like doing budgeting and trying to figure out things. So this was fun because they gave me better tools to go through and like prioritize and say like what's the necessary products you need and then what do you want. And then, like, prioritizing, do you need your electricity? Do you need your rent? You know, these basic things, like, living necessities that you need. And then maybe if you have a little extra, you can use it for, like, maybe one big thing, you know, for the month, you know, to enjoy what you had worked for, you know, to reward yourself. And I think that's an important thing in life to remember is that, yes, we may be working in life and, yes, we need to pay the bills, but we also need occasionally to reward ourselves for the hard work we're putting in because, you know, life would be pretty dull if we were just working 9 to 5 just to pay the bills.
Just to survive. Yeah, I see young people get in trouble with commercial credit cards and whatnot. Because they look at it as an extension of their income. It's like, well, I don't have the money now, but next month, you know, or I can pay it off in little tiny bits. I saw something on TV the other night that freaked me out. These people were talking about there are all these online buy now, pay later programs that they'll just, you know, let you in no matter who you are, no credit check, nothing like that. And a couple of these women's, you're like $3,000 in debt on these buy now, pay later. And one of them had $300 in buy now, pay later debt with DoorDash.
Oh, wow.
Just getting food.
And you have to be careful about what comes in the mail. They'll say, oh, we'll give you $1,500. And then you flip it over and it says, but it'll cost you $4,800.
Right.
I just laugh and tear those up. I really do need to get onto the site or call the number that you can get that stuff to stop being sent to you. It's just wasting mail.
Yeah. Burning down trees for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My postal worker doesn't need all that.
There's speaking of the budget coaching, one of the, a couple of the recovery hours that we ended up having, Tom Riverman has done these life basic necessity learning tools that we've needed to learn, whether it be about politics or budgeting or, you know, financing. And some of the stuff that he was teaching us about the financing stuff is his past experiences with, like, you know, money and stuff, and saying, like, don't make the same mistakes I did. And I learned, like, there's alternate programs for kids out there, like the STEP program card, which basically builds credit without, you know, doing the whole, what is it called? The interest thing. It just comes directly out of your account, whatever, right. Like, your money. And then there's also another one, like Chime does that too as well, where you can get like the Chime credit card, but it actually comes out of your account. So it acts as a debit credit. So these are good alternatives, ways of using building credit for your kids.
That's awesome. Cause normally it's always been credit cards. Yep. And what I find so ironic is that you have to, it seems you have to have loans and debt and things like that to have a good credit score. When I went and got a loan for my car about 3 years ago, the lady just looked at me and said, I don't need a cosigner. You just don't have any credit. And I was like, well, that's because I don't want to have credit cards and stuff. But getting that car loan started, you know, all of the credit card companies sending me stuff. So it's actually really good because I have teenagers. And so I wrote down those
two things you talked about.
Yeah. Yep. I like that.
Yep.
It's a better way to start getting credit, and that doesn't risk.
And you can still continuously use it as even as if you're an adult, so you don't have to necessarily use a credit card. You can still build your credit, still can get an apartment, still can get a mortgage, rent a car. So all these programs, like the STEP and the Chime thing, are debit credits. They're just really great programs. Well,
and there's nothing wrong with getting a credit card. You just can't look at it, like I said, as an extension of your income.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I want it right now. Well, you know, could you pay cash for it right now? No.
Yeah. I like using it for my...
Maybe you should wait until you actually you put it on the credit card, because you do want to build credit. Because if you want to make a major purchase like a car,
it's
a
helpful.
Home, God forbid,
right.
The point is... what you're building is a credit score.
Yeah.
The higher your credit score, the lower the interest rate typically you will get. Now, I'm 70 years old and been reasonably good with credit over the years. You know, I made my mistakes and, you know, had my screw ups and whatnot. But my credit score is at a point now where I get preferred rates if I need to buy a car. Denise has seen my car. I need to buy a car pretty soon.
Yeah. You know,
well,
it's been lasting you pretty well.
It is.
You've been happy with it. It's getting close, though, huh?
It's getting close.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's the old 1 foot in the grave and 1 foot on a banana peel.
Well,
but
at least you got your money's worth out of it.
Yeah,
right?
And it keeps starting, so
that's
I'm going to keep going. But anyway, you know, that's why you want to build credit, is not so much to show off that you have a groovy credit score, is that, you know, it actually will pay you when you need to use credit. Because most people are not going to be able to whip out $40,000 to buy a new car.
No.
Yeah, my mom used to pay cash for cars. That was really smart of her, I feel like. So I was just going to say that using your credit card to get, like, fuel that you have in your budget and then you pay it off, I mean, those are good things.
Yes.
I like to do that.
Exactly.
Well. Small things, smart idea.
Yeah, exactly. And let's see, the next thing, they talk about case management, one-on-one meetings to receive life coaching, discuss personal goals, and gain support in moving towards a healthy life and sustain successful employment. What did that look like for you, Ivy?
So I have actually had two case managers in that program. So one, unfortunately, wanted to move closer to their kids, so that they ended up moving, and then we ended up getting a new addition to the case management, and I really admire her. She's really helped me come along, and I've been working on the Genesis process for a good, I'm gonna say 8 months now, so I'm still working through that. It's a different approach on a different type of therapy. It really involves getting to know yourself in a deeper level, and also learning where your faith is and where you define. And I feel like I'm still both sides of Jewish and Christian, because I originated from a Christian environment and faith, and then I was always welcomed in that field, and then moving into the Jewish customs, yes, it has its ups and downs, but I was always connected to feeling some sort of, I don't know, it was the aspect of the community and celebrating the holidays together as a family, you know. Granted, like, not everybody accepted me because I was converted, so it felt like a lot of the time I was the black sheep of the religion part of it, just given because I had converted. But I really do appreciate the culture and the community and the, you know, the traditions and stuff. I mean, everybody should have that in their life. But in the case management part of working through the Genesis process and working through your life goals, I believe that have significantly had made my ambitions higher for myself and have made me more confident. And I really feel confident in moving forward into this new position in life. But I would recommend it to anybody who is struggling through, you know, maybe self-confidence or, you know, just trying to get their head on straight and figuring out where to go and getting advice when, you know, the first step in recovery is admitting you need help. Right. And identifying that you do have an issue and, you know, stepping forward and taking the responsible approach and saying, I need help. I really do think that's important, and let other people help you.
Yes. We weren't meant to do life by ourselves.
No, we're really social creatures.
Yeah,
yes.
We need each other.
Yes.
We really do. And I don't know if you remember, Johnny, but okay, good. I was going to say, so out of all the classes, faith-based things, I will say that the drug court program was amazing for me. But the Genesis process study I've done probably 8 times now, I've led it a bunch of times as well, has been the most life-changing study, book, self-health, faith-based thing I've ever done. It's the reason how I quit smoking. I've made so many positive changes in my life. It's neuroscience and also recovery-based, you know, proven skills. When you're able to identify different things that are your false beliefs and replace them with God's truth. And just even that piece is so incredibly amazing. So, and I'll stop because this isn't my moment here. But I always totally geek out about that. I love that.
Yeah, no, it's great.
I'm so glad that you're doing that. Yeah.
When she started talking about Genesis, that's why I looked at you. Yeah. I went, oh, I know somebody who did that program. Yes. Okay, and on from case management, recovery programming, a faith-based recovery program applicable to all. And we provide lessons and activities designed to help individuals find and deploy healthy coping behaviors and a good support system. Our recovery hour is based on the Genesis Project, Relapse Prevention Workbook, and you can find more about it, blah, blah, blah. So we already talked about that, you know, as a part of the case management.
So what also that means is we do a recovery hour every Wednesday. So we basically use some of the stuff in the Genesis process in the recovery hour, mm-hmm. or we'll do some fun activities during that hour. So just last week we ended up building gingerbread houses, and now we're having people come in and vote for their favorite gingerbread house. So this actual tomorrow we'll be picking to see who actually won their favorite gingerbread house. So that'll be
there
awesome.
You go. That's fun.
Okay, yeah. So I mean, I'm going to have to go down there and
yes,
vote.
Yes, you both have to go down there.
It's good to have a holiday tradition, yes, things yes. like that. That's fun.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Especially when it's, you know, has to do with making gingerbread houses or decorating cookies. That's kind of a must.
Now, here's something that will be near and dear to Denise, being as she is a recovery coach or support coach, really. You have one-on-one weekly meetings with that to discuss personal goals and, you know, would they say experience support in the context of healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. So what did that look like for you?
So in another sense, I also was in the leadership program. So I met with my support coach on a week-to-week basis, and we walked through different things I wanted and goals I wanted to achieve. And not just in leadership, but in life in general. Also, leading by example is the best way in positive experiences with other people and community. And my support coach, she taught me basically, was very honest and very blunt. And I loved that. I loved that she didn't beat around the bush, because she knew that I could push myself forward with the honesty and truth to that. There's no sugarcoating a lot of the time. There's tact, yes, but no sugarcoating on stuff that you can excel at, and they know that you're quite capable of doing that, and I really appreciate about that about her. So I want to say thank you for that. Also 4-H too. 4-H is a great program. I recommend anybody who's interested in doing that. It's a great way to learn some leadership and home ec and just really awesome stuff as well. Just great. But yeah, support coach meetings on a regular basis really helped improve my goals forward.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you find some of your peers look at the support coaching that you do in a similar way?
I think so. I mean, it's kind of just nice to be able to sit with somebody and figure out what their goals are or what they're trying to do and navigate next steps. Like, some people like really need it broken down. Like, we're finally looking at each and every single step. We can mind map something. We can whatever. We can do research. We can work on stuff together. Again, it's just that, you know, we're not meant to do life alone, you know? So we need to have people in our lives that walk alongside us. And in my case, being a coach who understands what it's like to figure out recovery, you know, and then to walk alongside of somebody who's trying to navigate that as well, that common understanding is helpful.
Cool. I also really recommend, like, also a lot of people will try to plan 5-6 years. I really recommend that people who plan 5 to 6 years in advance, they're not really present in the present moment. And focusing truly on what is here and now is important too, just as much as maybe a week ahead of time. You know, our ambitions change, but also we should keep on track with what's happening around us and be aware of that too. So
I love what Ivy just shared, because I'm a very in the now type person. Mm-hmm. And I'm not very good about 5 years down from the road. I kind of rely on my faith a lot with that, but I like to be right here in the present. Yep.
Be where your hands are. That's mm-hmm. my motto. If you can be where your hands are, that's for me. That's when I'm in touch with God. Mm-hmm. Because I am 100% reliant at that point, even when he makes the microphones not work.
Yeah, were you really like in your car and working on stuff this morning when I was giving you my very large and weird question?
Yeah, I was literally pulling the entire front assembly off so okay. I could change a light bulb.
Oh yes.
I hate Subaru engineers. Were you watching, they did that.
Or were you watching a video to do it?
I watched a video to do it, and cool. then I was just, you know, kind of in the process of doing it. But I was actually, when you texted me, I was getting very close to that hurling tools across the room. So it was a good little.
It worked out good.
It was a good little break. Yeah, yeah. It was that one little clip that I forgot, goodness. And I'm trying. Got the whole bumper of the car hanging out in the air, and I'm like, why is it coming off? Okay, employment training. Clearly, you were a full-time employee there, but there's more to that training, I'm sure, because you're moving into a managing position with a retailer now, so that must have been fairly intense.
It was, actually, given the fact that when I first started the program, I was thrown back into intake
quite the deep end. Like, I was dealing with customers on, or donators actually, on a day-to-day basis, and sometimes having to deal with, you know, turning away some of them, you know, because either the furniture wasn't, you know, quite up to par, or it was broken or whatnot. And, you know, I'm going to be honest, I was a people pleaser at that time, and saying no was a hard thing, you know, and I was always afraid, like, of conflict, you know, of getting into a hand-in-hand or whatever, fight. And so I was always, you know, Mark was there, you know, guiding me through this process, and he says, it's okay to say no, you know, don't be afraid to say no, you know. Yes, we do appreciate their donations and everything, and we can say that, you know, but ultimately, we have the choice of saying no, and it's okay. And that was kind of a big thrown in the deep end, and also lifting furniture and all that. I mean, granted, I lived on a farm and was chopping my own wood, but this was a whole different ball game. So, yeah, I just went from a very unsocial situation to dealing with people on a day-to-day basis, getting overstimulated sometimes. So, you know, it was a big step in the approach to employment, training, and learning how to deal with people on a day-to-day basis. And then progressively moving to cashier. Yeah. They realized, hey, I was pretty good at it. I was actually dealing back in intake and learning how I was dealing with the customers. I was very polite, very, you know, oriented with the people, smiling, enjoying their company, asking them how they're doing, you know, making funny jokes or, you know, asking them how their day was. And I just really vibed well with the customers usually most of the time. And we do really appreciated, you know, communicating that way with the donators and also just the customers who would come in through the store. Also working through Salt and Vin, which is basically the vintage and boutique area, was a lot of fun, getting to research all their qualities and, like, what is an actual vintage item and what is a boutique item and what is, you know, what do they call it? There's a vintage and then there's the...
Antique,
yes. Yeah. Thank you, Johnny. So there's a difference. So anything past the 1940s and under is antiques. Hmm. And then anything above the 40s is a vintage item.
See, so, I'm learning stuff right now. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And the lady who is in that department was the one who did my interview with Cheryl. So she's really sweet. Love her to death. If anything, I would think she's my actual grandma, but she's just awesome lady. Anyway, other than that, the cashiering was a big thing for me, is having other people come in, learning beside me with the cashiering. Mm-hmm. I noticed that there was some people who were struggling more than, and being able to lead by example and helping them build their confidence up. I, being in the leadership thing, that helped me out as well as them, feel good about myself and them feel good about themselves. Is like, hey, this person's walking alongside me, is struggling in some sense, but also we lift each other up, you know? So I think it's overall a good habit to keep our minds in set of, yes, we're all in this together and we're all after the same thing.
Yeah, it's a team effort for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can remember helping different people with, like, computer skills and whatnot.
Yeah.
Oh, as he looks at me, he just, like, side looks at me. I was going to say, so I'm vintage. Are you vintage?
I'm vintage.
By a little bit,
I'm borderline antique.
Yes,
yeah.
That's what I was going to say. I was doing the math in my head.
You guys look great, though.
Thank you.
She looks greater. I'll give her that. I will give her that.
You're still technically middle-aged, though, remember?
Yeah, that's
I
right.
I said 40 to 70 is middle-aged.
Right. Yeah. So I'm,
I don't know what to tell you about next year.
Yeah, I'm aging. I'm aging out of that. And the last thing on the list here, they talk about supplemental education. Now, it sounds as though that you had gotten past, you know, the need for GED, but were there other educational opportunities for you there?
Well, actually, I actually did go through the GED program. I technically had learned some things from homeschooling, but I technically didn't actually graduate with my GED. So I had to re-go through the program itself again to get it. So it was very helpful that they had that supplemental education thing for me to pick up again and get my actual GED.
So. Yeah, right, then that helps you
get a better job. Yes,
that's awesome.
Yes,
nice.
And that way I can go back to college, get my bachelor's in hopefully criminal justice and minor in psychology, so I could be a case manager.
That's awesome.
That'd be awesome.
Yes. That's
speaking of case managers.
That's what my kiddo's going to do, my 17-year-old.
Well, listen, Ivy, we're at the end of our time here, but I want to thank you again for coming in and sharing your story and all about what the Hope at Work program is. I hope it inspires some of our listeners to, if not get involved in it, support it somehow or another. You can also make big donations to the Hope Center. You don't have to just buy stuff.
That's right.
You know,
Even though they invest in extraordinary people like Ivy.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And speaking of extraordinary people, Ivy is quite a poet. She read some poetry at the event, the documentary event, and I actually asked her to bring a little something along today to share. So, Ivy, I'll turn it over to you, and then I'll close it out.
All right, thank you. Flesh and blood was made by me, Ivy Blue. My heart continues now. Years pass, pieces reform into something strong. Skin originally gray, now brilliantly firm, sun-kissed anew. My bones were weary, brittle, and soft, now sturdy, tight, and upright. My brain was fried, overspent, and abused, now brilliantly empathetic and understanding. My eyes blurred with tears and sorrow, no longer crying for the past. My lungs burn for fresh air in this pollution, no longer in the smog, free to breathe the fresh air. My nose runs with a steady stream of sadness, smelling this passion in freedom now. My lips chapped from the bitterness, fresh and full, ruby red, able to smile. My body once wasn't mine, I was a slave. Now tables reversed, I'm living, thriving, conquering. Throw your best at me, and I'll rise up to the challenge. My body, my rules.
Thank you. All right. That was beautiful.
Thank you, Ivy. That was beautiful. And I'll close it off with my usual, you know, if you think you have a problem with substances or behavioral health problems, well, you do.